It's Jennifer Diane Gostin, and welcome to Once Upon a Time in Adoptee Land. You may have wondered what reunion looks like from an adoptee's point of view, or be embarking upon taking that journey yourself to search for your first family, or simply want confirmation that you are not alone in your experience. Wouldn't it be empowering to have many of your burning questions answered here? I met my next guest in person over 10 years ago at an American Adoption Congress conference in Orlando, Florida. She is a birth mother, in reunion with her son, and one of the best search angels I know. Her name is Marilyn Mendenhall Waugh. She has helped so many members of the Constellation experience reunion with biological family members as an extraordinary genealogist. We have managed to stay in touch through the years by attending at least 5 more in-person conferences and through social media. In this episode, Marilyn gives guidance to anyone interested in a reunion. Listening to her share during this recording reminded me of the workshops she frequently gave to a room full of eager participants glued to her every word about searching for original family members. I was one of those adoptees in that space to hear from her with notes and handouts in hand. Marilyn will share a part of her relinquishment and pre-internet reunion journey. I find her to be a humble person, and perhaps that's why she didn't share a fact about herself during our time together. I think it's something very important for you to know. She is featured in a powerful and moving Jean Strauss short film titled Four, F-O-U-R, Birth Mothers, Four, F-O-R, Mothers, that I encourage you to watch via a link that can be found in the show notes. It is a firsthand account of what many birth mothers went through when they discovered they were pregnant as a teenager. Marilyn is the director of Adoption Concerns Triangle of Topeka, a search and support group serving those in northeastern Kansas, and past president of the American Adoption Congress. She is a frequent conference presenter on ethical search and reunion techniques. For the past 28 years, Marilyn has volunteered in the post-adoption services of Kansas Division for Children and Families, and she was presented their 2014 Kansas Service Award. Allow me to introduce you to a person who has been paying it forward for decades with the likes of Lorraine Dusky. She knew the importance of being open, honest, and public with the telling of her story in the hopes that others would feel less alone. She is one of the kindest, generous, and compassionate people I know. When our paths crossed in 2011, I knew that I wanted to get to know her better, learn from her wealth of information, and stay connected to her for years to come. We've managed to do just that. Marilyn, I'm so glad you said yes to a conversation with me. It's been long overdue as far as I'm concerned because I've known you for many years. And you were one of the first birth moms that I met when I got acquainted or better connected to the community. So I want to welcome you to Once Upon a Time in Adoptee Land. And you're in Kansas. You're in Wichita. Yes. No, you're in
Topeka.
Yes, you're in Topeka, Kansas. So how are you doing today?
Fine, other than it started snowing.
We were talking about the snow, whole snow thing, right? Like, yeah, I'm not a big fan any longer. I think being from Chicago, I've seen enough snow to last a lifetime. So I understand how you feel. Yes, and we met years ago. I believe it was Orlando, Florida, at an AAC.
I think so.
Yeah, at an AAC conference. And whenever I think of you, I just get happy vibes, like really good vibes. You bring that, being the person that you are. And there's so much work you've done in the community over the years that I really want my listeners to get to know you by sharing that. So wherever you want to start and however much you want to share would be great.
Okay. I know one of the things you mentioned was talking about the birth mom or first mom experience. I'm an older birth mom, so I use the term birth mom. Some people prefer first mom. I don't care what you call me, as long as you call me, type thing. Growing up was extremely difficult. My mother was mentally ill and extremely violent. It was not a good childhood, in summary. My high school sweetheart, Mike, who, interestingly enough, is an adoptee, he and I discovered the start of my senior year that I was pregnant, and I was 16 at the time. We decided to go ahead and get married and looked into housing and getting married. And it was obvious at 16, there was nothing available to us at that point in time. We decided that we did not want my mother harming the baby. We had visions of her actually killing the baby. So we contacted my grandmother in Phoenix, Arizona. She said, if you can get down here, I will help you, which was my lifeline. Mike and I pulled our resources, and we were able to purchase a plane ticket for me to fly from, I was living at that point in Wichita, Kansas. So I was able to fly from Wichita to Phoenix, and I stayed with my grandmother then for a week at that point, and that was in January of 1970. You could establish yourself as a resident in Arizona if you had lived there for a week. I don't know if that's true. I'm thinking it's probably no longer true, but I became a resident. I was able to move into a Florence Crittenden home in Phoenix. See, I was there from first part of January to 1970 to June 2nd, 1970, when my son Michael was born. My dad and my mother came to pick me up after I returned to the Florence Crittenden home, and they drove me back to Wichita, and I was able to reunite with Mike, the birth dad, and it was a really difficult time. I was deeply grief-stricken, and I needed to talk about what I had been through, the experience, and Mike grieved differently. He couldn't even talk about our son that we had relinquished for adoption. That was the pivotal point that broke us apart then at the end of the summer. I had to return and finish high school, which is real interesting after you've had a child. I went back for a semester to school, and I also took a full-time job at a shoe store so that I could save up money and hopefully go to college in another city and get away from the toxic environment of my home. And I was able to do that. Let's see, fast forward. I got a bachelor's degree and then a master's degree at Kansas State University in Manhattan, Kansas, and ended up taking a job at Children's Mercy Hospital in Kansas City. And it was about that time that Lorraine Dusky, who has become a friend of mine, she wrote the book Birthmark. I'm an avid reader, and I religiously read newspapers. I'm probably one of the few people left in the United States that still takes a newspaper. There was a review in the Sunday paper about Lorraine's book, Birthmark, which tells about the relinquishment of her daughter from the viewpoint of a birth or first mother. I ran down to the plaza area to my favorite bookstore, and as soon as they opened, I was knocking on the door, and I had the review in my hand. Said, I need this book. They had the book. I took it back to my apartment, read it cover to cover, and cried and cried and cried. I thought, I am not alone. There are other birth moms in the world. I think that's what really opened things up, and I could start to talk about Michael and the relinquishment of the child to other people. And I wasn't some kind of weirdo that had been through this experience. It was after I had read that book a few years later, I met the man that would become my husband. I guess he just didn't notice the stretch marks on my stomach. He had proposed. It was a New Year's Eve, and I still hadn't discussed the fact I'd had a child with this man who had proposed, and I had accepted. We were walking to breakfast the next morning to a restaurant, and I thought, I've got to tell him, and I'm sure he would leave me. But I just took a deep breath and said, I need to let you know that and just blurted out the story at about 500 words per minute. And he looked at me and stopped. And I thought, this is it. He's going to say goodbye. And he said, did you really think there was anything in your past that would make me not love you?
Mm.
I thought, this is the right guy.
This is him. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So we've been married 44 years now, next month.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. And he has been so helpful. And we, a few years later, then ended up moving to Topeka, Kansas, which happens to be the capital of Kansas. I saw ads in the newspaper that said an adoption group was being formed. They would welcome adoptees, adoptive parents, birth parents, whatever. And I thought, gosh, if I ever have a minute to myself, because at that point I had a hyperactive 2-year-old and was pregnant. And I thought, I need to go to the meeting. So one day I actually had time to go to this evening meeting. Steve watched at that point I had 2 daughters. He watched the girls and I walked into the meeting. Now, mind you, this is before the internet was around. So the meetings were large. There were probably 45 to 50 people that came to the meeting. And the woman who started the group would have us sit in a large circle so you could look eyeball to eyeball with whoever was talking. Towards the middle of the meeting, then Kathy turned to me and said, did you want to share your story? And I said, sure, here's what's going on. So I gave a brief rundown. And this woman across the circle from me kept staring at me. I thought, what is your problem? After I finished talking, she said, I was in that maternity home in Phoenix. I thought, oh my God, what are the odds? And she said, I've reunited with my daughter. I'll be glad to help you. I thought, I was meant to come to this meeting.
Right.
Yeah. So, and her name's Pam. So the next day, Pam came over with all the information of how she had searched for her daughter and was very helpful. I was able to connect with the social worker that interfaced with Florence Crittenden Home and had arranged for Michael's adoption. I had, at that point, already received my hospital records. Things did not go well with the hospital. And I thought, I don't even know if this baby lived or died. They could have put anyone in my arms then when I briefly was able to hold him. So I wrote to Shirley, the social worker. I said, I need to know developmental milestones, and listed several. And what were the APGAR scores? Is he functioning all right? Did he live to adulthood, almost adulthood? He would have been a teenager at that point. She said, or sent back a letter saying that she had contacted Michael's adoptive mom, who dictated a 2-page letter back to me that was so sweet and so nice, and said, don't worry, you know, he's doing fine. He has a learning disability with reading, but is handling that okay. He seems to have ADHD. And I thought, yeah, just about everybody in my family has that. I asked Shirley, I called her and I said, can I write Sharon, Michael's mom, a letter back, and can I sign my first name? I live in a neighborhood with 2 other Marylands. It's not like it's an unusual first name. I said, fine. So Sharon, Michael's mom, and I exchanged several letters. And right, I think it was the day before Michael's 18th birthday, this large manila envelope arrived in my mailbox. I happened to be home alone that day, and I opened it up, and these pictures just spewed out of this envelope everywhere. And there was a little tiny envelope inside that you would find if you had flowers delivered. And I was just crying and looking at these pictures. And Michael grew from an infant to an 18-year-old while I was in that hallway. Sharon had the envelope in there that said, this is nuts, having to go through the social worker. Here's our name, address, and phone number. I thought, oh my God, I've hit the jackpot. Yeah.
She sounds like, yeah, pretty extraordinary mom.
Yeah. Yeah, she is. So we've changed the adoption from a closed adoption to an open adoption. My husband and I go down to Arizona usually twice a year and spoil the grandkids rancid, which is beyond spoiled. We spend time with Michael's family and with his extended family. And it's just been a wonderful relationship. Once Michael and I reunited, I finally was able to forgive myself for placing him for adoption. It was up until that point, I just had all this guilt. So many people helped me with the search. I had joined a support group down in Phoenix, and I had, besides the support group here in Topeka. And I really recommend that people do that if they're searching in a state different than the one where they're living. It really helps to talk to people in a group. If there's not an adoption group, genealogy groups are very helpful. So find out what resources are available in that state, because it may differ quite a bit from the state where an adoptee is living. That's when I became a search angel. And for those who aren't familiar with the term, a search angel is someone who helps adoption searching but receives no payment at all. We do this just on a volunteer basis. You can't call yourself a search angel if you take any payment. I became really good at searching. I love puzzles. I love mysteries. And I think that curiosity just really helped me become a good search angel. There's a really old joke about how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time.
I love that. Yeah. I say that a lot.
Yeah, and that's what it's like to do an adoption search. There's not just one site to search for information and boom, your search is done. Now you're going to have to use several different sites. And I truly believe in my heart that no search is impossible. The length of time varies. With the internet, some searches can be done within 5 minutes, and some it could take 5 years. One thing that always surprises me is the adult adoptees that don't realize they have two birth certificates. And I just kind of wanted to mention that for anybody that isn't familiar with the terms. There's an OBC, which stands for Original Birth Certificate, and that's issued at the time of birth. The birth mom's name should be on there. Birth fathers weren't given rights until about 1972 by the U.S. Supreme Court. So you often see a blank where it says for father. Just because a father's name is on the OBC, that doesn't mean they're the biological father. They may be a legal father. If the birth mother had ever been married and even was divorced, then it would probably have the name of her former husband on the birth certificate. So don't expect that the father listed is the gospel truth. The other birth certificate is called ABC, which is amended birth certificate, and that's the document issued at the time the adoption's finalized, and that reads as if the adoptive parents gave birth to this child. Anytime I talk to genealogy groups, it's like their heads spin around. They go, could you repeat that? I just can't believe that a document, a legal document, is changed, but it is. Mm-hmm. For those that aren't sure if you can get your original birth certificate in the state where you were born, I recommend that you go to a website. It's a search site where you can find out the laws for each state and make sure that you're using a website that updates that regularly. Yeah. You don't want to use one that has wrong information.
I'll be sure and put the link in the show notes. Yeah.
AdopteesUnited.org is it.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. There is so much you shared. I want to thank you for everything, every single thing. I just remember hearing you mention Lorraine Dusky.
Yes.
Was the person that made you feel less alone through her book. She's been a guest on my podcast. It was just an honor for her to reach out to me and want to be on. And she shared so much. And I know she, as well as you, have just made major contributions to our community. So I appreciate you sharing your connection to her. And
sure.
And explaining the difference, right, between OBC and ABC. That was me in 2009 and 2010.
Yes.
Like, what? There's another birth certificate? So I appreciate you sharing that, because I don't think we should ever assume that a listener, or particularly an adopted person, knows all this stuff, because I just picture people coming into the community, getting better connected every day, and really being unaware of so much that goes on.
Yes.
When you have been relinquished and adopted. And I think something that you said that really touched me is that you forgave yourself once you were in reunion and met Michael again. I think that that happens quite a bit with first moms, original moms, birth moms.
Oh, sure.
Right? And I know,
yes.
I think about the memoirs I've read, and right now I'm thinking of Laura Ingalls. And I don't know if you've read her book, Forget This Ever Happened. And such a moving account of being sent away as a birth mother and expected to forget this ever happened. Yeah, it just touches my heart.
That's what the social workers in the maternity home told us then, that you will have other children, you will forget this ever happened. And obviously there was something wrong with me, because I could not forget. Once I connected with the search and support group in Topeka, there's not a single birth mother that I talked to that has ever forgotten that they had a child and has not replaced them. But remembering their existence and sharing that with any subsequent children.
Yeah. Now,
I do lots of kind of in-service things on how to search. I did want to mention one of my very favorite places for searching, and that's the local public library. Reference librarians walk on water. They are amazing people. You need to see what databases your public library offers. I do searches for the state government of Kansas. We don't have any money to put towards searches. Almost every public library, I've yet to find a single one that does not have an Ancestry.com subscription. It's available to patrons with a library card. I tell people, take your iPad or laptop with you, and usually you can just connect in through the building. If you're anywhere in the building, you can access their Ancestry subscription. Our library is amazing, and they have all kinds of databases you can access, and it's filed under their genealogy section. Genealogy is the number one hobby in the country, and so there's all kinds of things available. One thing I learned, I took a kind of in-service session through Ancestry.com several years ago, and the big tip I came away with is not everything at Ancestry.com is indexed. You can put someone's name in there, and it'll pull up what they find as far as indexed things on that person. But if you go to the search tab at the very top, and you pull that down, and there's a segment called Card Catalog, and you click on that, and they have a section where you can either do the title, don't do the title. They have a section called keywords, and I'll put in whatever city or state I'm looking for, and it'll have Polk directories online there. And for those not familiar with Polk directories list every address in that city. They list every phone number. Then they'll list everybody that lives in that city. So there's three distinct sections to the Polk directory. You can find out what job, where this person worked, where they lived. You can get all kinds of information from that. But if you just put the name into Ancestry.com and don't go to the card catalog, it's not going to come up.
Hmm.
So, yeah, I've gone through lots of Polk directories online, and God love whoever scanned them in that city.
Yeah.
That had to have been a major job. And not everything on the internet is true, especially, again, on Ancestry.com. You have some people that think, oh, I'm into genealogy. Well, they have the wrong birth dates, wrong information. So be sure and check anything that you find there.
Yeah.
I'm glad you said that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And on the websites that I do use, I use the ones that are free and do not upgrade to a premium level. If you have lots of money and want to do that, sure, fine, but you're going to get the same information from two or three websites that have it free of charge. And don't search using your phone. Look at the surface of your phone, then look at the size of a regular size computer or laptop. The features that are on the computer are not going to be the features on the website. They cut back for a smaller screen. Now, I was giving a search workshop once at an AAC, American Adoption Congress, conference, and this gal sat on the back row with her phone out, and I had already handed out my list of websites that are my favorite hits, and she was going through all of them, and at the end of the talk, she says, "I can't find my birth mother on any of these." I said, "Look at your phone. Let's get a laptop." We found her mom within 5 minutes, but she had to use the features that were different on the website that was showing on her phone, because we use the websites in a little different way than they're designed to be used.
You know? You're making me think about the workshops you gave. Like, you're giving a mini workshop here, and I just really appreciate that. Because in Orlando and through the years, Denver, twice we were in Denver and Cleveland and San Francisco and Atlanta, you gave workshops. And I know for the past 28 years, you have volunteered in the post-adoption services of the Kansas Division for Children and Families and was presented their 2014 Kansas Service Award. Congratulations on that.
Thank you. That was quite the surprise. They told me I needed to be at the conference for the state. And I was like, okay, that's odd. And then they announced that.
That's an honor. Yeah. And you've always been just so warm to me. I remember when you got my book, you bought my book, you read it, and gave me
and loved it.
Thank you so much for that. Like, your support has been unwavering all these years, and just means a lot to me. And I can only imagine how many other adoptees you have, you know, just helped them navigate search and reunion through your work, the work you do. So I appreciate you saying, like, defining what a search angel is. I think we've heard that term as adoptees through the years. And it's really important to emphasize that angels, search angels, don't receive payment. Mm-hmm. We can appreciate as adoptees in that many times we have to dish out money to get anything,
like
from the adoption agency, I had to pay $100 for the original birth certificate. I had to pay a fee, you know, just at any given point, we're told, okay, it'll cost you X number of dollars. And many times adoptees have expressed hundreds and hundreds of dollars to people to help them search. So it's no small thing when you can connect with a search angel. In fact, I was having a conversation yesterday with an adoptee that mentioned, and this is back in the 80s, right? So this is pre-internet. And her search angels were called the Snoop Sisters. And they were able to get so much information. Like you were saying, it could take 5 minutes or 5 years. And they got so much information for her in such a short period of time. And she was born in the state of California. In fact, they were able to get her original birth certificate, which, you know, California is still a closed state.
Right.
We just love search angels. I think I speak on behalf of every single adoptee that has ever embarked on a search.
And also, check to make sure this is a legit birth angel. I met a woman at an AAC conference, and she was at my workshop, and she said, "I just need to tell you my story." And I said, "Why? What's going on?" She said, "I got to get chills just thinking about her." She said, "I thought I had found my daughter a year ago. We had been corresponding. Things were going well. We were going to meet. I sent her money for a plane ticket, and she never heard from her again because that wasn't her daughter." Yeah.
Wow. There's that red flag, right? She had to pay for a plane ticket.
A friend just sent me something yesterday, and I still need to respond to it. Please tell adoptees not to post on Facebook or Instagram holding a sign with your information. it's too easy to be conned. There's some evil people out there. And someone just sent me, you know, help. This gal is not Kansas, but you need to talk to her to take that down. And I did get a call once from a woman, and she said, I learned that my mother had relinquished triplets in Kansas. And I said, oh, okay. And she said, and I posted a sign on Facebook, and I'm thinking, oh my God, everybody in the world must have been contacting her. Well, it was ABC, NBC, all the news stations thinking, ooh, triplets, this will make a nice story. And she said, and people are sending me names of every group of triplet boys they can find. I said, send me what you've received on the triplets that would be the right age. Let me run down every one of them. And so we were able to figure out who the group of triplet boys were. They had been just hammered by people saying, oh, there's someone looking for you and you're an adoptee, aren't you? It just did not go. It was not a good reunion.
I am so glad you shared that because I think you're the first person I've heard tell me that's not a good idea. And I absolutely can see why. And it kind of felt funny, like when I first started seeing that on social media.
Yes.
But I didn't quite know why. So thank you for sharing that.
You're giving away facts that you need to confirm with whoever you're looking for to make sure they're the person that they say they are.
Right. Yeah. I definitely appreciate you saying that. If someone wanted to search and they live in one state, but they found a search angel that lives in another state, is that doable?
Oh, sure. I pretty much help people across the nation. Make sure they have some kind of experience in that state or can connect with people in that state.
Okay.
And that's been the good thing about conferences. Then we get to know each other in states. And I can say, oh, you're from such and such a state. Let me introduce you to my friend who does searches down there, and I will vouch for her. She does a good job.
Okay, yeah.
But a lot of that is just information that's available on websites. It's really changed searching once the internet came through. And then we haven't even talked about DNA analysis. What a game changer.
Yeah. I think we cannot overstress that it could take 5 minutes because
yes.
I know for me, and shout out to Melissa Mitchell who did my search. She did it in like minutes. She found my birth mother within minutes of having her name. So sometimes I know back then, 2012, I didn't expect it to happen that fast. And I've heard other adoptees say, I thought, a couple of years or several months from now, I'll hear back, and they heard back immediately. So you have to kind of prepare yourself for that.
Right. And I do tell adoptees that when we're working on a search, I said, you need to be thinking now about what you're going to say to this person, because we could be done in 5 minutes. And I don't think people believe you until they go, oh God, you did do it in 5 minutes. So it's good to think, what do you want out of this relationship? What do you want to say? What do you want to ask? Go into this prepared.
Yeah, absolutely.
I do have two gals in my support group here in town, both of whom had reunited with birth fathers, or so they thought. And two totally different cases. Brenda had gone to meet the man that was named in her adoption record as being her birth father, and her birth mom had been a teen. She went to Ohio to meet this man. Oh, yeah, they look alike and blah, blah, and said, well, maybe we should do a DNA test and see if you truly are the father. And he agreed, so they did the DNA test, and they were just absolutely sure it was the right person. It was not the right person. And I said, you know, without DNA, you would have gone to your grave thinking that was your birth father and giving the doctors information on your kids and grandkids using his medical history. With Carrie, she had a relationship for several years with the person that her mom swore up and down was the birth father. And again, there was some resemblance. Her birth father's wife one time when Carrie was visiting, said, you know, have you ever thought about doing a DNA test to just confirm that you two are related? And Carrie thought, that's kind of an odd thing to say. Maybe she's seeing something I'm not. The birth father did not want to do a DNA test, but his son, who was an adult, was willing to do a DNA test. And I told Carrie, you have already done a DNA test on a different company. Use the same one that your supposed half-brother is doing. If you are not related, if it shows no relationship at all, that'll answer the question for you. And it showed no relationship at all. So I was able to help her with the DNA analysis because I do have a science background too. And we were able to get her connected. And her real birth father was very upset that he had missed out on all these years, and they're having a real good relationship right now.
That's good.
Yeah.
Well, I want to ask you about your decision to be open, honest, and public about relinquishing a child to adoption. Sure. And I kind of know it got started when you realized you weren't alone, when you got connected
right
with Lorraine Dusky. What else would you have to say about that decision you made?
Well, I was sure when I went to the first adoption meeting in Topeka that I was going to walk in and there were going to be 40 pissed off adoptees looking at me like, how dare you come in as a birth first mother? And that was not the case at all. I was warmly welcomed. And like I said, the connection I made with Pam, that helped me then ultimately reunite with Michael. And I realized when I was telling friends one by one then that no one burst into flame or banished me from their life then because I had relinquished a child for adoption. They felt my pain that I had been through. Many of them knew I had had a horrible childhood. They were supportive. Mm-hmm. I took my mother-in-law to a quilt show in a neighboring town, Lawrence, and I thought, I have not told my in-laws yet. I probably need to mention that, oh, by the way.
Yeah. Right.
So I thought, I'm not returning to Topeka until I tell her. So we're driving back from the quilt show. And it's like, I noticed my speed's kind of slowing down as we approach Topeka. And I finally said, I just need to tell you this. And I told her the whole story. And she was very supportive. I don't know why I was so worried about it.
I appreciate you sharing all of that. It's always interesting to me, like when I think of Lorraine and others who have decided, you know what, this is not going to be a secret and I'm not going to carry this alone. And I just think that my being public will be very beneficial to adoptees and other birth moms.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, and a birth mom helped me because at this point I had two little girls. One was in kindergarten and the other one was in preschool, and I was pregnant again with my third daughter, and I thought, I need to tell them what's going on. Mm-hmm. And a birth mom at conference said, you have to realize that if you say, oh, this horrible thing happened to me, I had to relinquish my son, is not the way to approach it with little kids. You say, this wonderful thing has happened, and here's a picture of Michael, make it concrete. And he's a child I had when I was a teenager and I was not able to keep him, but we're very glad that his life has turned out well. And we're going to meet him sometime soon. And the kids were like, oh, okay. Yeah. They became experts on adoption. Then I had to tell Michael's family that I'm pregnant again, which was kind of interesting. I'm sure they thought, my God, does she ever stop? So my youngest has never known life without Michael in it.
Right. Oh, that's so cool. Thanks for sharing that.
Sure.
Yeah. And so your relationship was from the very beginning. How was it with Michael in reunion? And what is it today?
The first visit he came here, he was so nervous. And I was, of course, nervous. This was our first face-to-face meeting since he was an infant. He was nervous. He wore way too much. I don't know if axe spray was a thing back then, but you know, he was just kind of overpowering with the fragrance.
A little loud. And,
yeah. And he slept in the guest room, and I thought, oh my gosh, he's making his bed every morning. No, he wouldn't even turn down the bed to go to sleep. He just wanted to be the perfect person.
Right.
And he stayed for a week in our house. After that, I got to see the real person. but I don't know who it was that came that first time, but it wasn't Michael.
So he stayed with you an entire week in your home.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
And I think it was day 4 or 5, because we would stay up late at night. He also has ADHD, as do I. And Steve was like, you guys just stay downstairs. That's fine. And he said, I just have to tell you something. I said, what? You can tell me anything, Mike. And he goes, I haven't smoked the whole time we're here, and I really need a cigarette. And I said, do we need to go buy something? I'm sure I can find a store that's open. He goes, no, I have some in my suitcase, but I didn't want to smoke in front of you or the kids, and I won't smoke in the house. So we went out on the porch, and he smoked a cigarette.
Right. Oh, my goodness.
He was really trying to be the perfect adoptee.
Yeah, he was. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Well, did you run into any glitches along the way, or has it just been quite harmonious the entire time?
Towards the end of that first week, when the mutant was visiting, and I said, I have all my information in a folder here on the table if you want to see what I did to find you. And he looked at me, he said, I can't look at that. And I was like, oh, wow, mm-hmm. I must have overstepped. And I quickly put that in a drawer, and he has never looked at it.
Interesting.
So, yeah, so I thought that was an interesting remark. And
yeah.
Yeah.
I think male adoptees are very different from female adoptees. Maybe it's just the whole male-female thing, period, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's been my...
Well, and one day we were in... his wife, who's also an adoptee.
No kidding. Michael's wife is an adoptee?
Yeah, for a rather tense few hours, we were afraid they were half-siblings. Then she's 5 years younger. Michael called me. It was about midnight or 1 a.m., and he'd gotten back from a date. I could tell he was in love. And he said, there's just one problem. She's an adoptee, and her birth father is named Mike. I said, and from Kansas. I said, you know what? There's more than one Mike in Kansas, but we need to make sure this isn't it. Let me call the social worker in the morning and see if she'll check. And so she illegally checked to make sure they were not related.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was kind of. Yeah. So anyway, back to the car. So my daughter-in-law and I are great friends. I love her dearly. And we were in the car, and she said, did I tell you that I did an ancestry DNA test? And I said, no. I said, what'd you find out? And she said, well, I'm not going to search. I know it would upset my mom. And I said, okay, you know, if you ever want, I'm here for you. I'll keep it confidential, whatever you need. She goes, yes, I know that. And she said, and Michael did one. And I said, oh, okay. And he was puzzled that he didn't match. And I said, he did ancestry DNA? And she said, yeah. I said, I did family tree DNA. And I thought, oh my God, I'd better do ancestry DNA. So he knows.
Right.
That
oh, wow.
It. So as soon as I got home, I ordered the test, and of course we matched. Then the last time I was back in Arizona, Mike says, I'm getting all these emails from people in Wichita saying, we're related. And I said, is their last name? And I gave the last name of his birth father's birth family. Mm-hmm. He said, yes. And they want to know how we're connected. And I said, well, it's probably not a good time to tell them that grandma and grandpa relinquished a child for adoption.
Wow.
You know, just tell them that you're adopted and you really don't know much beyond your birth mom. You know, I'm not going to out grandma and grandpa.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I want to shout out to Pam that you mentioned earlier.
For
stepping up and saying that she was at Florence Crittenden in Phoenix, I guess at the same time you were, right?
Well, she was there about 3 years before me, but the people, the little old lady, who's probably younger than I am now, but the little old lady that ran the place and was the house mother was the house mother when Pam was there.
Yeah.
There was a cook that I adored because I was just this real frail, skinny kid that had no money. I was withering away to nothingness, and she put me to work in the kitchen so she could give me extra food. I was just nothingness.
Yeah. That's sweet. And that's so sweet.
Yeah. I love that woman. And because of her, I can make a perfect egg.
Is that right?
Poached egg. Yeah. Every time I poach an egg, I think of that woman.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Laura Engel, she mentioned someone who was so loving to her in the home. Yeah, because that, if you can have that, you know, someone during such a difficult time, I think it does lessen a little bit of the hardship.
Yeah. And I still am in contact with one of my roommates at the Florence Crittenden home. And we always talked about she had a daughter, and of course I had a son. You know, no, we should get these kids together. And we arranged for a blind date for them.
No kidding.
In Arizona. But something had come up and they had to cancel. And then Mike met the woman who became his wife. So it didn't work.
Yeah.
Thought that'd be interesting in a wedding. Oh, yeah. Our birth moms were roommates at a Florence Crittenden home. I'm sure no one's heard that at a wedding.
Yeah. I'm so glad you're sharing so much with us today. It's really good. It's good information. The stories really paint a beautiful picture of how you show up in the world, and I can't get enough of hearing that. So in closing, we'll just kind of wrap things up, and I've been asking this question: what would Marilyn in 2024, you today, right? Tell Marilyn 10 years ago in 2014.
10 years ago?
Yeah.
We were already reunited then, and I was already a search angel. I don't know that my life changed that much as far as the adoption world in 10 years.
It could be anything.
Yeah, I wish I could go back in time and tell that frightened kid who was trying to stay alive and get away from a very violent mother, you will survive. My sister and I had a saying when people would ask, what do you want to be when you graduate from high school? And Donna and I'd look at each other and said, alive.
Mm.
You know, and I wish I could tell her, you will survive this. You will survive the violence. You will survive relinquishing your son. And there are good times and good people ahead in your life.
Oh, you're making me emotional, and you've actually given me a brand new question. What would you tell the you of any period in your time standing here today? Yeah, beautiful. Thank you for sharing that.
Sure.
I just heard something recently, and who was it? It's Jill Bolte Taylor. Have you heard of her?
The name rings a bell.
She survived a stroke. Yeah, 20-something years ago. She's a neuroscientist, and she wrote a book called A Stroke of Insight, and she did a TEDx talk. You may have seen that, right?
Yes. Uh-huh.
And she said something I had never heard before on a podcast. She was a guest. She said, keep your child alive until 25. Keep them alive till 25. That's what she said. And I thought, that's brilliant, right? Like, as a parent, do the very best you can, at least till then. And so I'm sorry that you had such a troubled childhood. For you to say you'd go back today, Marilyn today would go back and tell her you'll be all right.
Yeah, and I think I'm all right because of friends, mothers, who saw what was happening and gave me the love and support that I was not getting at home.
Yeah.
There was a mom across the street from our house, and I was welcome there anytime, night or day. And then when they moved away, my friend Maggie, who I'm still extremely close with, she lives out in Denver now and is an adoptee, but her mom and dad just welcomed me into the family and showed me all kinds of support and love.
Yeah.
You know, you get through things with people that help you.
You surely do. And I've often said the people that love you when you need it are your family.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, is there anything that I didn't ask you that you like to share?
God, just with adoptees or even birth parents that are searching for family, get as much information as possible. And that may mean asking an adoptive parent if they're still alive. Sometimes there's info they have that they haven't shared with you or they didn't think would be important in a study. Gather from a variety of resources. Like I said, there's no one place to search. And eventually you can take enough bites out of that elephant named adoption search.
Beautifully stated. Thank you so much, Marilyn, for taking the time out to have this conversation with me. It's just been a joy.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me. I've enjoyed talking with you.
I knew I would learn something new, brand new, when I pushed the record button, and I believe that you might too. I hope that was accomplished here because Marilyn shared so much. She is always interested, willing, and able to impart what she has come to understand from her experiences. Marilyn is passionate about trying to make a person's search a successful one. I appreciated her telling or reminding us of how a search can take 5 minutes or 5 years. All too often, I've heard an adoptee either say it happened faster than I thought, or it's been years of hearing nothing. Both ways can have its challenges, yet being aware of that before going into the uncharted waters can prove beneficial. And the other good news is being intentional about finding a reputable, reliable, and relatable search angel is imperative. Much like selecting a therapist, being intentional about noticing red flags and utilizing your detective skills goes a long way. Marilyn's childhood was less than healthy and desirable. She endured the lack of any sort of support, which led to the heartbreak of ultimately separating from her son. I've repeatedly heard birth moms tell me the anguish of that decision can last a lifetime. It's good to know that some relief came for Marilyn when she was able to let go of the grief through being in reunion with Michael. Thank you, Marilyn, for having this conversation with me. The way you show up in the world makes me light up. I absolutely know that you turn your pain into purpose by helping members of the Constellation be in reunion. You being vulnerable and transparent within the adoption community has tremendously helped me. I have no doubt that you have lightened for many others the weight of it all when it comes to the subject of relinquishment, adoption, search, and reunion. I'm happy to hear that you and your husband, Steve, enjoy a warm, loving relationship with your birth son, Michael, his wife, Kristen, and their children, Mason and Samantha. If you're an adoptee and would like to share your adoption journey, visit JenniferDianeGolston.com. If you like Once Upon a Time in Adoptee Land, leave a review on Apple Podcasts. Follow and or give, hopefully, a 5-star rating so others can find it too. During the course of your day, I trust you will tell at least one friend or someone who you believe might find value in it, because word of mouth is still the very best way for the show to grow. Thank you for being here.